It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Kate Archer-Kent.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Last week, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention passed new recommendations to delay hepatitis B vaccines for newborns. Previously, the CDC had recommended that all infants be immunized for the disease within 12 hours of birth.
The move is part of wider changes reflecting Health Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s vaccine skepticism and the reshaping of federal health policy.
How will new federal guidelines affect Wisconsin newborns? Dr. Jim Conway is professor of pediatrics in the divisions of infectious diseases and global pediatrics at the UW-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health. He serves as medical director for UW Health Immunization Programs. Dr. Conway, welcome back to Wisconsin Today.
Good morning. Great to be back with you guys.
Before we get into the new guidelines, let's get some basics on hepatitis B. What is it? Why do we worry about it?
Yeah, hepatitis B is a viral infection that causes liver inflammation, liver damage, and is often a chronic infection, especially when it's acquired early in life. It leads to longstanding liver disease, cirrhosis, and is the most common cause of liver cancer. It's much more transmissible than other viruses that we think of in the same category, HIV and hepatitis C, which are much more unstable and much more brittle. Hepatitis B is a really sturdy virus. It can live on surfaces for up to a week, and so it's a major concern.
Up till these new guidelines, the recommendation had been, like we just said, hey, all infants soon after birth. What was behind that recommendation up till a week ago?
Yeah, the problem with hepatitis B is that people can live with it without a whole lot of symptoms and not be aware of it. It's very easily transmitted if somebody's got active hepatitis B at the time of delivery. About 85% of babies born to a mom who's got hepatitis B are going to end up infected, and about 90% of those are going to stay chronically infected, and those then lead to longstanding problems. It's very difficult to get everybody in for screening. About 15% of people routinely don't get screened for hepatitis B, and they can acquire the infection at any point. And so these chronic infections, while was tried to do it in a risk-based way with vaccine, just didn't work. And so eventually in 1991, we got to the point where we recommended universal vaccination for all newborns. And it's really been one of the major successes of immunization programs.
Right. That takes us to the new guidelines. Moving back, if I'm reading it correctly, Dr. Conway, to a risk-based approach saying, hey, well, if the mom has hepatitis B, then yes, let's vaccinate right away. Otherwise, no, not right away. When the mother's negative for hepatitis B, the phrase when and if they should get a vaccine comes up in the new guidelines. What changes here?
Yeah, I mean, everything. This is really, sort of putting babies and young children at risk in a lot of different ways. You know, obviously, if we don't know everybody's status when they're being born, it's the safest thing is to just give every kid the vaccine so they're protected immediately. You know, the other problem is that then it gives people the idea that these are an optional vaccine and then leaves people potentially in the position where they're making decisions that are unfortunately misinformed, because about half of the kids that ended up infected in this country by the age of 10 actually acquired it after they were born. There's a lot of other ways, when we think about kids getting scratched or bitten at school, it can even be transmitted by people sharing toothbrushes inadvertently. So it's a very easy virus to acquire if you're around people with chronic disease. But the real risk is that, the likelihood of a chronic infection, if you're born to somebody with Hep B that doesn't know it, is quite high. And so this universal safety net really has gotten us into a great position over these last 40 years.
Yeah, with that transmissibility issue, one of the arguments from members of the committee that made this decision was hepatitis B, they say, primarily a sexually transmitted disease. It can be transmitted sexually, but it sounds like you're saying that's not the only vector. That's not the only way it's going to potentially be exposed to infants.
Exactly. I think obviously we know with the opiate epidemic, HIV and hepatitis C and hepatitis B are being more readily transmitted, both sexually and with needle use in older individuals. But hepatitis B, I think, has been lumped together probably inappropriately with those others in a way that is detrimental to the discussion. Because like I said, it can live on surfaces for up to 7 days. You don't really need a big dose of it to get infected. And people that are infected are actually shedding in large amounts. This is one of the viruses that you can acquire from saliva from other individuals. That doesn't seem to be the case with HIV and hepatitis C. So while it is sexually transmitted, it's also transmitted in a lot of other ways that unfortunately can lead to longstanding problems for people that are infected.
We're talking about a key federal committee no longer recommending all babies receive hepatitis B vaccines within half a day of birth. Dr. Jim Conway is with us, medical director for UW Health Immunization Programs. Dr. Conway, the committee making this decision, what is the significance here? How important is this this recommendation unit for our vaccine policy and practice in this country?
Well, traditionally, the ACIP has been responsible for harmonizing the recommendations from all the other professional medical groups and making a recommendation then to the CDC that sets what we have come to consider as sort of the routine recommendations and the routine immunization policy. You know, it's been an area of both pride and trust in our public health system for many years that we were able to kind of come up with these harmonized recommendations. I think people need to realize that, you know, there have always in the background been recommendations from the American Academy of Pediatrics, American Academy of Family Physicians. Most of these medical groups, you know, make recommendations. And, you know, currently it looks like we're going to probably end up depending on those recommendations as being more evidence-based and more based on science. I think the problem here with this current recommendation is that there hasn't been any new science or new publications or new discoveries that would make us at all concerned about the safety of these vaccines. And there's certainly nothing in the epidemiology and the public health that would make us feel like hepatitis B is no longer a concern. You know, quite the contrary, this same committee a couple of years ago made very strong recommendations that we actually need to do better on immunizing older adults because, you know, these birth doses only came in routinely in the 80s and became public policy in early 1991. And so we've got lots of older adults that are walking around that actually missed out on this particular vaccine. And that's one of the groups where we're seeing rising rates of hepatitis B, again, because of the opiate epidemic and other issues. So this is a major linchpin in our public health programs. And it's unfortunate if they're not really looking at the science in the way that we've become used to.
Bringing things home to Wisconsin, as a state, we have relatively low levels of vaccinations for things like MMR, the measles, mumps, rubella vaccine. Are you concerned that with this change in guidelines from the feds, that hepatitis B vaccination could move in that same direction in Wisconsin?
Yeah, I think it's a great question, Rob. I mean, we're certainly concerned with anything that undercuts the reliability of the information that people are seeing, as well as anything that undermines the confidence in vaccines. You know, one of the things we all have to recognize for providers and patients is that, you know, there's a lot of vaccines and it's complicated science. And so we fortunately have trustworthy organizations that try to sift through that and make these kinds of recommendations so that basically every kid, every person in our state gets an equal opportunity to be protected against diseases that can disable and kill them. And so, you know, we really want people to sort of establish trust with their providers, but also understand that there are organizations that, you know, they can trust that are going to continue to do this. And we're hoping, you know, that at both the state level and at the national level, that people will listen to these reliable organizations and understand that the science clearly tells us that these are valuable interventions that do make life better for everybody.
Dr. Conway, you mentioned there are a fair amount of vaccines out there. And I think for many parents, they might think, hey, maybe I'm not anti-vaccine across the board, but it does feel like a lot. Is it worth revisiting our vaccine schedules and saying, hey, maybe are we doing some that aren't needed anymore, that the science doesn't match up with anymore, and we can maybe pare back that schedule a little? What do you say to that parent who's at least puzzled by the number of vaccines out there?
Sure. Well, I mean, I think one of the things we need to remember is, you know, when there's a lot of disease, it makes it easy to make a decision to implement a vaccine program. The harder but almost more important part is to maintain that while those diseases still circulate globally and can easily be reintroduced. And obviously, that's what we're seeing with this measles outbreak. We've now got whooping cough outbreaks starting up again down in the southern United States. You know, we're going to potentially have one of the worst flu seasons ever as we see flu virus coming in from outside the country. And so I think we need to recognize these things are all still out there, and really maintaining protection is going to be the most important way to get to the point where we can eliminate or eradicate these. You know, we've certainly pulled back on some vaccines. Many people my age all got a smallpox vaccine. And when we eliminated that, we did stop immunizing against that. You know, when we got polio under control in some areas, we've been able to eliminate, you know, one of the types of polio that's in that vaccine. And even the flu vaccine, during the pandemic, we got rid of one type of influenza B. So instead of a quadrivalent flu vaccine, now everybody's getting a trivalent because we didn't need that other one. So I think people need to understand that from a policy standpoint, we're constantly looking at what's necessary and what's important. And whenever there's an opportunity to pull back, we certainly are willing to have those conversations. It's just premature to do that for many of these diseases that are still common and unfortunately can be potentially silent killers.
I've seen the argument that sometimes vaccines are victims of their own success. Hepatitis B kills globally 800,000 to a million people a year, a few thousand here in the U.S., but because so many people are vaccinated, it doesn't loom large as a problem. Does that sort of off-the-radar factor make people more likely to say, eh, maybe we don't need these anymore?
Yeah, great observation, Rob. You know, we call that the vaccine complacency problem, where when the disease becomes rare or at least doesn't get as much press, people kind of forget about the importance of continuing to maintain protection against it. You know, it's much like wearing a seatbelt. You know, 99% of the days you're in your car, there's no way you're going to have any kind of accident, but it's there when you need it if something unfortunate and unexpected happens. And that's sort of how vaccines provide protection, is they're there when you need them, and it's never known when that day is going to come. Again, you know, these are things that are safe and extraordinarily well studied. And, you know, we don't make these kinds of recommendations at a policy level lightly to give these kinds of products unless there's really clear benefit for every individual and for the communities.
Very briefly, Dr. Conway, a parent, expected parent, comes in, says, hey, I'm seeing these different guidelines. What do you recommend to that parent for hepatitis B vaccine for the newborn?
Yeah, I think every kid deserves this vaccine. It's still well deserved. It's still important. There's still a lot of unknowns out there about exposures to hepatitis B, and that can happen at any time in a child's life. And why not get them protection as soon as possible just to be able to prevent against the unexpected?
Dr. Conway, thanks again for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
Dr. Jim Conway is professor of pediatrics in the divisions of infectious diseases and global pediatrics at the UW-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health. He serves as medical director for UW Health Immunization Programs, been talking about changing federal recommendations on hepatitis B vaccines for infants.